Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're tuned into another episode of Real College Podcast, Quarantine Edition, and I'm your host, Casey McCabe. As a podcast, RCP has been dedicated to providing you with the highest quality listening experience possible during the pandemic, but we have been regrettably neglecting our users' other senses. According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the action of looking is defined as directing one's gaze towards something or someone or in a specified direction. In this extra special episode of Real College Podcast Looking Edition, we invite our listeners to indulge their other senses and direct their gaze towards what one U of M student has been doing to regulate the spread of COVID on campus, a look into what has been going on behind the scenes at the Wiseman Art Museum since the pandemic began, and an extra special installation of Radio K Sports. Time to open up those peepers. You won't want to miss this. Be sure to stick around. Although the U has created its own COVID guidelines, these rules are not always enforced. In response to this lack of enforcement, one student has taken it upon themselves to spot those not following the rules and make them visible to the university faculty and the campus community as a whole. Here is producer Emma Morris with more.
During the pandemic, one of the easiest things you can do to protect yourself and others is wearing a mask. This seems to have become a political opinion, but it is just simply science. Seeing those not protecting themselves or others is what sparked my guests to create their Instagram account, at MaskedUpUMN. I had the pleasure of chatting with them about it, and here's what they had to say. My first question is, when did you start this account and why?
I started it, I think, the end of June. It was like partway through the summer. I worked at a restaurant by campus, and when I'd walk home from my closing shifts, I'd pass Sally's every night. And it at that point in the summer, they weren't even trying to keep up the appearance that they were following any sort of guideline or mandate. And that was very frustrating. And also, the university was postponing making decisions and keeping things vague so that students couldn't plan for what semester would look like. Like at that point, I still kind of figured that there'd be a lot more in-person stuff. I just didn't even know what fall semester was gonna look like. And it was just very frustrating to not be told anything from the university.
I then asked about their background in public health. Was it part of their degree or was it just something of interest?
It is for fun in my, well, not for fun, but it is a passion project in my, some people think I just do it for enjoyment, but no. But I am minoring in public health, and also the history of science, technology, and medicine. It's just always something that I've been passionate and interested about.
Before the interview started, we were just talking about classes and such, and my guest mentioned that they were taking 18 credits this semester. So I had to ask, how do they manage posting on the account as well as keeping up with all the schoolwork?
I mean, sometimes I fear that I kind of use the account to procrastinate my work a bit. I've started doing this new thing where I can't do more research for the account specifically than I am doing for all of my classes. So that's been a doozy. But over the summer, I worked a lot, but I still have a lot of downtime, and I wasn't exactly hanging out with my friends like I would have normally. So I just didn't really have anything to do besides spend hours and hours and hours a day on TikTok. So it was good to kind of have something to keep me busy. But now with classes, I'm also actually busy too. So I'm trying to work on getting a better balance and stuff, but also with the DMs, they come mostly on the weekends, or in higher volume, which is when I don't have classes. So that kind of helps with the flow too, but I try to also just be informed about, like, even before I started the account, like, what was new in COVID research and, like, what, have there been any new guidelines added? So it's pretty much stuff that I was also just would be looking up on my own anyway to just learn more about what's going on.
I then asked more about the content of the account. Are the pictures being taken by you? Do you make the infographics, or do other people contribute to the account?
Yeah, so right now, every graphic that's been on, I've made it on Canva, the free version. I work with what I'm given. But yeah, and at the beginning, like, I barely knew how to use it. Now I'm more proficient, but I'm still not a graphic designer. And as of right now, I'm still, like, running the account alone. Like, I'm the only one with the login information. But I'm, like, looking into, like, getting, like, outside input and stuff about how to, like, better run it to make it be the best that it can be. And also with a lot of the messages and stuff I get, like, I don't go on Reddit, I don't have a Facebook, and that's, like, where a lot of people get their information about what's going on at the U. So it's stuff that, like, I personally wouldn't know about, but it helps that, like, there's such, like, a large community of people who are working to want to inform each other. Like, there's people who have certain jobs or, like, where they live or connections where they can get information that could help others that they don't necessarily have access to or would know where to find. So that's nice.
Following this question, we discussed haters. Well, not exactly. People have not been kind in their DMs, and I wanted to know how they dealt with negative pushback and rude messages.
My first messages on the account actually were hate. Like, I'm not even gonna, like, the stuff that I publish is not, like, the worst of it. Those ones I just, like, delete. But, like, some people definitely are not fans, to say the least. And I don't know. I kind of, I'm really bad at, like, dealing with, like, serious emotions. So I kind of, it just, like, rolls off my back. I have thick skin. Then at, like, 2 a.m., I might cry myself to sleep, but it's fine.
Finally, I asked if they had any closing comments, and here's what they had to say.
As tempting as it is to just be mad at, like, the students who are visibly and publicly, like, having parties, and particularly the freshmen in Superblock who do that, it's, like, it's not just them. Like, there's still, like, there's more people who are doing it who just aren't posting it to social media, or which, yeah. And then also, like, everything really is the fault of the university for, like, encouraging us to come back to campus and then not having any safety, like, precautions put in place, or not near enough. If you as an individual choose to go out, that's not a good thing. I'm not going to encourage that. I'm not going to be like, yes, be young. But again, that it's not quite the same as, so, like, a big university with power who, like, they could have stopped this if they were like, virtual semester, we'll take the loss of revenue.
Reporting for Real College Podcast, I'm Emma Morris.
When it comes to the visual experience on campus, it is hard to find a place that stimulates the senses quite like the Wiseman Art Museum. The Wiseman, built in 1993, is one of the most iconic buildings on campus and has always reminded me of a pop can when it freezes and explodes. Although the Wiseman has been closed since last spring when classes transitioned from in-person to online only, there has still been a lot going on behind the scenes. I got the opportunity to chat with Katie Covey, the Wiseman's Director of Public Programming and Student Engagement, and Laura Pilarski, the assistant to the director of education, about some things they have been working on since the WAM closed its doors last year. One of the big projects Katie and Laura have been working on is the WAM Collective.
WAM Collective is sort of a two-tiered program. First, it's our student membership program, meaning any student at the U can sign up to become a member of WAM Collective. And you can do that by going into the museum and physically signing up or going on to the website at z.umn.edu/WAM Collective. And once you sign up for WAM Collective, you'll be on our list to get access to student-only events, invitations to programs and discounts, and kind of insider information for the WAM shop. And then if you'd like to get kind of a more hands-on approach to the WAM Collective, you can apply to become an officer. So officers are 5 positions, and they shape the student programs for the museum, which are about 7, traditionally 17 per year, I guess kind of in pre-COVID times. Now we're kind of figuring out what that looks like, but the collective meets every other week for 2 hours, and they develop digital content campaigns, research the collection, work with artists to present public programs, and officers are paid $500 per semester for their work as an officer.
Katie went on to explain how the WAM Collective is critical to the Wiseman's approach to remaining relevant during the pandemic.
We've actually spent kind of the summer, folks who are around, talking about what does a museum more generally mean in the time of physical distancing and while we're closed to the public. And one of the big initiatives is really creating digital content for folks to engage with the museum. So one of the roles and responsibilities that the collective officers will be working on is creating digital tours for a new app that the museum is launching this fall. And the collective will be creating the content for that app. So that's going to be artist interviews, videos, kind of biographical information, and then just information about the different types of art that are in the museum, but also the museum's public art collection, which is all over the East, West, and St. Paul campuses. All the positions are the same, the officers, so they're all just officers. And it's really about bringing your ideas and what you're studying in school and those different lenses to the work of the museum, and advocating for the student voice.
According to the duo, the collective is responsible for creating the Wiseman experience that students get to interact with. They then went on to preview some of the content that will be coming our way this year.
The collective really shapes what the student programming is at the museum. And Laura could talk about the first program of the season that we'll be hosting called Conversations with Creatives.
Yeah, so Conversations with Creatives in the past was an event that we did each semester. So it was meant to be kind of a networking event between local creatives and their career paths. Because in the creative professional world, you know, not everything is so linear as it is in some other fields. So really talking about their own personal paths and how they kind of shape themselves and their practices. So this year it's going to be through Zoom, live streaming through YouTube, through Zoom. And it's sort of the same event, but just more lecture style, and then also we'll have a Q&A. So we're going to be featuring Lissa Carpe, who's graphic designer, illustrator, and art director. We have Helen She-Wolf Zing, an author, and WiseInc creative publisher, Dara Beavis. So we have a lot of different fields coming together here, but that's great because, you know, students get to hear about their different paths and kind of how they have such a diverse wealth of knowledge and different skills that they bring to the table. So they'll each give a 10-minute lightning talk, and then we'll have a Q&A at the end so that people can kind of open up conversations and ask questions.
Katie went on to further explain the Conversations with Creatives programming.
That event is really about these established but yet emerging professionals. So having a muralist, having an art director, and having a publisher talk about the advice they would give to their younger selves, and how to network and hustle in the creative economy during the time of COVID, which is what a lot of folks are trying to figure out how to do. So if you sign up to become a WAM Collective student member, you'll get an email to get your name on the list for that event, which is on Wednesday, October 14th.
In addition to the WAM Collective, the Wiseman is rolling out an all-new student group, and they are looking for new recruits.
This summer, myself and my colleague, Susanna, who's our director of communications, we participated in a national think tank project that was funded through the Aspen Institute, which was all about how do arts and cultural organizations mitigate social isolation in the time of physical distancing, which is a long way of saying, like, how do you do engagement when we can't physically be together? So through the series of conversations with arts leaders across the country, Susanna and I brainstormed about creating this new working group of students called the WAM Editorial Team, which is going to be all about creating digital content for our social channels that's in relation to our exhibitions and collections. So we're looking for journalists, we're looking for graphic designers, we're looking for video makers, we're looking for people who have experts in digital strategy via like TikTok and Instagram stories. So we're really looking for a creative cohort who can help us expand the ways that folks engage with and understand the museum and its mission.
Although the team over at the Wiseman is changing the game when it comes to experiencing physical art over distance, nothing beats coming face to face with the real thing. Thanks to the Wiseman, students can experience the real deal without leaving the comfort of their own home. Thanks to the WAM Art Rental Collection.
The art rental collection at the Wiseman is actually the oldest in the country. It started in 1934 and is named after Hudson and Ione Walker, who were the original benefactors for the museum before it became the Wiseman Art Museum. It used to be housed in the top floor of Northrop Auditorium before the 1993 Wiseman building was made. And that collection was established so students could bring home original works of art and live with them. So not only to have that experience of living and developing a relationship with a work of art, but also understanding that when you are doing that, you're supporting the lives of artists to be able to do what they do.
In addition to the normal catalog of art available for rental through the WAM, Katie gave me the scoop on a special curated collection of works, as well as how to secure some art for my very own apartment.
There are over 800 works of art today in the art rental collection. And in 2018, the WAM Collective Officer Group created a subset of that collection called the Homework Collection. And the makeup of that collection is a little bit more contemporary compared to some of the more traditional works that are in the larger Homework Collection. And specifically, a focus of that Homework Collection is purchasing works of art by Black, Indigenous, and people of color from the Twin Cities. So the WAM Collective has done studio visits and also gone to the MCAD art sale to purchase new works of art for that collection. So the museum is currently closed to the public, will be reopening on October 1st. So until then, you have to make an appointment to rent a work of art. And you can do that by emailing artrent@umn.edu or by calling Heather, who manages the collection, at 612-626-3389.
With over 800 pieces of work to choose from, it is almost impossible to decide what painting I want to rent. Fortunately, Laura was nice enough to give me the lowdown on a really cool new piece that was recently added to the collection.
So recently we've been talking a lot about Cezanne, which is a piece by Cameron White, and he kind of focuses his work on representing Black and brown bodies in these religious images, these kind of as kind of religious icons. And so this piece, it features a Black man in kind of a prayer position with a halo around him. So it's really, again, pulling from that religious iconography. And it's a really beautiful piece, and his work kind of focuses on challenging ideas of toxic masculinity within the Black community and focusing more on, you know, featuring feminine bodies and feminine Black men and kind of just challenging those notions and making them into beautiful icons.
Despite the variety of new ways the WAM has offered students to experience art, I cannot wait to be back in the museum in person. Fortunately, the WAM reopened on October 1st, so I got my chance. But for those of you who are stuck at home or would rather listen to your paintings, here is Katie to break down the cool new exhibits on display.
When the museum reopens, the exhibition Abracadabra and Other Forms of Protection will be on view. And that is a career survey by Minneapolis-based conceptual artist, feminist conceptual artist, Harriet Bart. It's really beautiful and shows objects from the breadth of her career from when she was an emerging student artist to contemporary work. And she's now in her 70s. And then building on that, a new exhibition that will be featured, will be installed in the next couple of weeks. So before opening, is called We Are the Story. And it is three quilts by Black women from the Twin Cities who are showing quilts that are narrative pieces talking about the Black experience in Minnesota. And those were curated by the Textile Center and the Minnesota Women of Color's Quilters Network as a response to the murder of George Floyd and highlighting the Black experience in Minnesota. So we'll be having some kind of ongoing conversations with those artists whose work is featured in the museum.
Be sure to keep your ears open for the rest of the RCP Looking episode. It's okay to rest your eyes. Reporting for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe. Although this episode has focused on looking and perception, the guys over at Radio K Sports Hour now invite us to focus our attention on what is unseen or hidden from view. Back again with another installment of Radio K Sports Hour, our Trask and Grant.
Hello everyone, my name is Grant Sandberg, and this segment of RCP, we're going to have a sports topic. We were able to interview Jordan McIntosh. He's on the men's track and field team, originally from Thunder Bay, Ontario. He's been named on the Big Ten Distinguished Scholar and an academic All-Big Ten, two-time letter winner in track and field, and even competed in the NCAA Midwest Regionals. We talk with Jordan about the current situation with Gopher Athletics and COVID and how sports are getting cut and his view as an athlete on that. Enjoy the interview.
Jordan McIntosh, thank you very much for joining us. Recently, Board of Regents voted 7-5 to cut three men's sports. You are with the men's track and field team. Your indoor season was cut. Outdoor season is still in limbo. What are your thoughts, reactions, feelings to the recent cuts by the University of Minnesota?
Well, thanks for having me. The decision was definitely bittersweet for us personally. You know, I feel really bad for the men's gymnastics team, the men's tennis team losing their program. That's definitely really hard. And then on the track side, you know, there's positives and negatives to what happened. You know, I'm fortunate that we were able to save the outdoor team, just like save the history that's there and like the coaches and just like the team in general. But obviously losing indoors is a big part of what we do here. So it's kind of like losing half of our season. So it wasn't totally a win for us, but it also wasn't a loss.
I'm curious, how were they able to tell you guys, or did you find out just from the news like everyone else, or did they do a good job of letting at least the athletes know ahead of time?
The first time they proposed it, or the second?
Just like the first time you heard about the potential cuts.
Yeah, so the first time they, Mark Coyle, the athletic director, we got on a Zoom call. We had about 30 minutes notice of a Zoom call that was supposed to happen during our practice. So we hopped on Zoom, and he told us that our team would no longer be sponsored after this year. And that was the day before the Board of Regents meeting that he would propose it. So he kind of waited till the last second, you could say, to tell us. Didn't give us much time to fight back before the meeting, but luckily the decision got pushed to a month later. So we had about a month to try and get our argument together as to why they shouldn't cut it.
Right. And so you guys did a lot of work, you know, fighting for your sports. Obviously, these cuts affect just over 50 student athletes, but there's potentially another round that's going to affect the women's side of sports that could affect up to 100 student athletes by this time next fall. what are the steps that they're taking? You know, these rumors are kind of coming out. Is there anything they've already started doing to kind of vouch for their sports?
Yeah, so yeah, it's definitely, that was an interesting situation because at the Board of Regents meeting, you know, a lot of the regents asked, like, is this all the cuts that are going to happen? Are there going to be any more? And then after you do some punching of the numbers, you realize that it doesn't equal out. So it came out about a week before the decision that 41 women had to be cut. I think saving the track team now pushed their number to 31 women that have to be cut now. But I think the reason they didn't bring that up in the meeting is because you need board approval for team cuts, but you do not need Board of Regents approval for roster cuts. So you can trim down your rosters without the approval of the board. So they definitely tried to, you know, not have that known, but it got out. And I think that's part of the reason why outdoor was saved, because it would also save some women's opportunities.
And did they ever talk about possibly just maybe suspending the team and bringing it back another year? Because if you, as you've mentioned about, you know, the history and stuff like that, it's a bit disappointing that they just straight go and straight cut the team rather than maybe just putting the team on hold for a year or 2 years, because obviously eventually COVID will pass and they'll be able to recoup that money. Why do you think they just decided to just cut it right now instead of just putting it on pause?
I mean, that was definitely just to do with budget. Like, we're anticipating, or I guess the university is anticipating, you know, $30 to $60 million in a shortfall this year. And saving or cutting these teams that were just cut saves $1.6 million. So as you can see, those numbers don't quite add up. So that's on a per year basis. So I think the argument that you could cut them only a couple of years, then you're only saving, you know, 3.2 million. So what's the point in saving 3.2 in the first place? You might as well just keep them the whole time. So they're just talking on a long-term basis, which obviously will be very long-term because those numbers are, you know, very different. But yeah, they didn't really, you know, give us an option to suspend rather than cut.
So Jordan, to finish up here, if people are listening to this or they hear about it through the news, what are the best ways that they can get involved or, you know, be active on social media to help support any of the teams that have been cut or any of the teams or athletes that potentially are facing cuts in the near future?
Yeah, so we have a website called savegophertf.org, and we also have an Instagram account, a Facebook, and a Twitter. So we're kind of covered on all social media. So if you get to one of those, you'll be able to, you know, follow links, see how to help. In regards to other teams, you know, that's something that we talked about a lot. Like, Minnesota was kind of, you know, the first one to go, so it's not necessarily the only one. So a lot of people are, you know, might follow us. So we want to help everyone we can. That was part of our fight, not just for us, but for other schools. So, you know, helping us maybe reinstate indoor track and field, hopefully in the near future, that might help other schools in return.
Awesome. Well, we thank you very much for your time, and best of luck to you and the rest of your team in the upcoming season.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it.
That's all for the special edition looking episode of RCP. Stay safe, Minnesota. We hope you stay happy, healthy, and connected. Until next time, signing off for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.